Good afternoon, Los Angeles. Steven Starr here with Indie Media on the Air, joined by Chris Burnett. Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's up, Steven?
So we got a great show today. We got a lot happening. We have a live update coming to you from Boston, from the Democratic National Convention, but actually the Indie Media Convergence Center in Boston. And after that, we will be joined by five members of the Kill Radio Collective, the one of the finest radio stations here in Los Angeles. If we could go live straight to Boston, I'd like to get Robert Baker on the phone with us. Robert, are you there? Robert, are you with us?
Hello?
Hey, man.
Hey, there you are.
Robert, you are live on KPFK Los Angeles 90.7, and we are here doing Indie Media on the Air, and we've got you on the line because I know you're in the Convergence Center in Boston at the Independent Media Center there. You might want to tell our audience what that means and what's going on.
Absolutely. The Convergence Center was... It's actually opened by the Black Tea Society here in Boston, a coalition of anti-authoritarians who formed last July when they learned that the Democratic National Convention was coming to Boston. They've set up this community center at the Community Church of Boston, right in the heart of the city, and are sharing the space with Boston Indie Media, Medics, and Food Not Bombs as kind of a one-stop shopping, I guess, for activists, both local and coming in from out of town, who are in the area, to get all the information and make all the contacts they need as they head out into the streets to catch some of the marchers and to engage in some of the direct action that's going on.
So tonight is day one, correct? And speeches from a whole gang of Democrats. Tell us what's been happening on the streets in Boston today.
Well, it's so far so good from Boston, as much as it can be, in what's nearly a police state with our free speech zone going on. We've had several direct actions that have been going on since this morning, and a couple major marches. Happy to report that aside from the few usual arrests one can expect for various reasons, the marches were very peaceful. They were conducted throughout the city, starting in the Boston Common, heading down to the Fleet Center. And they were able to get their message out without a whole lot of bad attention from the police. So the police definitely out in full force today. The main march we had this afternoon starting at noon was completely surrounded for the entire length. So it's it looks a little scary out there, but pretty good so far.
I've heard that there was a lot of resistance to actually using the protest pit. Maybe you can give us some background on what happened. And I also heard that a federal judge refused to move that so-called free speech zone, but yet criticized it.
Absolutely, yeah. We've earlier on this week, the ACLU and the NLG, along with a couple local groups, put forth a suit against the city to try to get all that taken down. And there was some criticism from public officials as to zoning off our First Amendment rights as provided by the Constitution, and yet the outcome of that was just that no change at all. Not only does the free speech zone remain and is, you know, only accessible to those willing to be searched upon entry in the one exit that's provided, but it was maintained with all of the amenities that come with it, including the mesh fences one can't see through, the razor wire lining those fences, and the netting at a ceiling at the top, making it completely, making those who go inside to partake in protests from that location completely invisible to any of the delegates that are visiting the city this week.
What is the actual distance between the that area and the delegates?
The distance between the Fleet Center, where the delegates are staying, and the free speech zone itself, which is quite small, only about the length of a city block here in town, is about, I'd have to say, it doesn't seem far. It's only about 1,000 yards from an edge of the Fleet Center itself, a bit further from where the delegates are entering. And this is the soft zone, which encompasses both the free speech zone or the hard zone, kind of encompasses the Fleet Center and this other zone here. So it's not a far proximity, but certainly, there is a distinct definition for when the delegates are entering and keeping the protesters who thought in the beginning of the year that they would be able to at least speak briefly or hand out flyers to the delegates far away from what's really going on.
Maybe you can give us a little bit of background on the strategy that the activists have been discussing and why what they're trying to do at the actual convention, and what kind of messaging, who are they trying to affect, and the overall strategy maybe of the organization you're involved with, Indie Media, as well as Black Tea Society.
Mm-hmm. The Black Tea Society is from a number of angles. They have a three-pronged plan, which includes the Convergence Center, the Alternative Village in the Convergence Center, which is essentially a small area set aside to kind of demonstrate what a community making its own rules would kind of be in a microcosmic kind of scale. And then there's the very, very democratic bazaar, which will be taking place all day tomorrow in the Boston Common, again on this larger scale, to show people a number of alternatives to several things, everything from more efficient cars to getting away from this two-party system between Democrats and Republicans, and what seems to be the only choices really available to anyone. That said, it's really this engaging the kind of two-party rhetoric that most people coming to Boston have in mind when they're doing their direct actions, that's what I've seen. Whereas we're trying to maintain that, yes, Bush needs to come out of office, but while you're trying to get him out there, notice that Kerry really isn't a viable alternative to really the interests of the American working class.
It's interesting that just over the weekend in Boston, we've had a gathering of activists and principled people from all over the world in the social forum. And in the studio with us right now, we have Alan Minsky, who literally got off a plane this morning from Boston. And I know, Robert, that you've seen a lot of that stuff going on as well. Alan, why don't you give us a quick update on what you saw while you were in Boston, this preceding the Democratic National Convention?
Well, I do want to say that, first off, I actually last night came by the Indie Media Convergence Center, and for those of us involved with the LAIMC during the Democratic Convention, it really just threw back to these incredible memories, because here was Indie Media being set up for the Democratic Convention. You know, the room was just charged and full of activists who are, you know, going to be participating in, you know, non-hierarchical participatory media. And, you know, everybody should visit the website, boston.indiemedia.org. And I think, I don't know, what is it, Robert, there seem to be about 8 center column postings already today. And there was a wire that's up reporting on the demonstrations from today. So it's a great website, and it was a great amount of energy there. And before that, you know, I was at the Boston Social Forum. Boston Indie Media had a presence there as well. And you can read about that as well on Boston Indie Media. But the Boston Social Forum was an amazing event. I think it had between 3,000 and 4,000 participants, hundreds of workshops. You know, so it was a great place for activists to meet, to organize, and to have just a lot of discourse. And, you know, certain things were great about it. Certain things were a little uneasy about it. But
As always.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, there were even more some Democrats there with their presence and all that. But, you know, it was a great event. And the workshops, many of them, all of the workshops I attended were incredible.
Do you think either of you, Robert or Alan, do you think that the occurrence of the Social Forum on the weekend prior to the Democratic National Convention might have highlighted issues and concerns to many that aren't being discussed at that convention?
Of course. And Robert, your thoughts?
Absolutely. It certainly gave people who might have been getting even out of the city during the course of this and how wild it is in Boston a chance to really familiarize themselves with issues that they might not have known of, and to get out their voice in what they'd like to be heard.
You know, I want to say about the things about what I would say were, you know, the criticisms that could be leveled against the Boston Social Forum. No fault of the organizers, I believe, but you know, you can see a great discussion about that actually on Boston Indie Media. If you find the Boston Social Forum center column piece, it's now down on page 2 because there have been so many postings, but there are a string of comments, and it's just, again, a great open discourse on the Boston Social Forum, a lot of insight there.
For any listeners who want to check into that, it's boston.indiemedia, IndyMedia.org. And for the next several days and for all of this past weekend, there has been incredible, constant stream of posts. You yourself can post to the open publishing platform that's available there. Please check it out. That's boston.indiemedia.org. Robert, we have a few days in front of us, big days for politicos in Boston, and maybe even bigger days for activists. What are you hearing? What are the plans? What's coming up?
Well, we've got another big march scheduled for later in the week, and that's just with Black Tea. There's several other affinity groups that are going to be having marches every day. And around these major marches throughout the afternoon, these are just circled by several direct actions that have gone on very well so far, downtown and around the Fleet Center, to try to get both delegates and the public involved in what's going on. There's been a positive response so far, and I respect there'll be a positive response to follow, but we remain cautious with a very high police presence in the area.
Have the police been inside the Convergence Center, and has there been contact between them and the organizers?
No, there's not. They've not come to the center. They've not even stopped by. We've noticed them driving by the area, but it's been very reserved. There hasn't been much dialogue so far. We've been certainly working with the Boston National Lawyers Guild to make sure that everything we're doing stays legal and that we stay safe and keep safe the people who are visiting the center and hanging out here throughout the day when they're not in the streets.
And for our listeners, could you just review a short list of the organizations that have joined together to form this Convergence Center and who's represented there?
Yes, it's again, there's the umbrella group, the Black Tea Society. Within that, within the Convergence Center, Boston Indie Media is here as well. We've got several computers set up and very thankful for the space. BALM, the Boston Area Medics, are here as well. They're treating people coming in off the street, either if they're injured, though there haven't been many of those. Mostly, at this point, people who just need to come in and calm down from the excitement that comes around the activists here. Food Not Bombs has also stopped by, and they're providing meals to all of us here and providing meals for the Alternative Village, again, the kind of community setting that has sprung up around here, the great community feeling that has sprung up between all the organizations and volunteers involved here.
Robert, I have one more question for you. Can you put these demonstrations in the context of the RNC that's going to be happening in New York next month? For example, I know a lot of people are coming to Boston to make it clear to the Democrats that their stance on the Iraqi war and the Israeli-Palestine conflict is unacceptable. Where do you see this event in the context of more people coming out to the RNC and a lot less people apparently coming out to the DNC?
Mm-hmm. I see as a kind of a smaller version of what we can expect with the RNC. One of the things we're hoping that'll happen here, again, to touch on something I said, was to kind of let John Kerry is not the most excellent solution to removing George Bush from office. One of the criticisms that we got early on, but if people are certainly starting to react to now in a positive light, is the kind of, you know, don't protest Kerry, we need to get Bush out. While we're working on that, certainly the energy to not only get Bush out of office, but to really take a longer, harder look at between what we're doing now and even the social forum again, to you know, really take a critical eye to the government itself, you know, to the presidential election itself. I'm hoping that energy will carry over to the RNC. People will be there not only to protest Bush and what this administration has been able to do to us in the past 4 years, but also the general system as well.
And if the feet of the Democratic politicos, if those feet are not held to the fire of a progressive agenda and better than that, then we're going to find ourselves with 4 years of something very familiar.
Absolutely.
Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
And
Alan Minsky for stepping in for a moment. And we're going to go out to a little bit more Sabretooth Tiger and then jump back into a five-person interview with Kill Radio, the or one of the finest radio stations in Los Angeles. And welcome back to Indie Media on the Air. This is Monday, and we are joined in the studio by five members, count them, five members of the legendary Kill Radio Collective, if I may put it that way. Kill Radio can be found on the internet at killradio.org. And interestingly enough, every now and then I get to catch it on the air. Sometimes it's on the air. I don't know how it gets there, but I love Kill Radio. You never know what you're going to hear next. It's an incredible group of committed radio programmers with tastes that cross the gamut of music and politics and ideas, and it's really refreshing. And I know for those of you who listen to Pacifica, you would get a lot of pleasure out of picking up some of this Co-Radio stuff as well. So we're joined in the studio by James Maverick. Hi, James.
Hey.
By Greg Bishop.
Hello.
David Bonobo.
Afternoon.
And Laura Hawther.
Hey.
And, of course, Chris Burnett.
Hey. Here I am again.
Chris is ever-present in our lives here. So we've got a great spectrum of folks here who are committed to Kill Radio, and I think that for many of our listeners, it's going to be real interesting to get a sense of and hear and understand how something like Kill Radio comes into being. Laura, let me start with you. Tell us how Kill Radio, where did it come from, and how long you've been around it? How did it get started?
Well, it started during the DNC here in Los Angeles. The IMC was being put together. There was a lot of work being done, everyone meeting, getting together resources for radio, web radio, video, and print media. And after the DNC, we were so inspired by what we had done, the Radio Collective decided that they wanted to continue on with their work. So we took it upon ourselves to build a whole new collective for web radio.
Great. And how long have you been doing this, Laura?
Well, how long has it been? Well, 8 years, I guess.
Since summer 2000, that would be 4 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
4 years, 8 years.
It's seems all like
yeah. Yeah, it seems like it's been a lot of work, so it seems, yes. Like
right, right. Well, so Greg, you've been around this since the beginning, I think, yeah?
Yeah, pretty near the beginning, uh-huh. Actually, a friend of mine that used to be on KBLT, the infamous pirate station, told me about Kill Radio, and I came to some of the early meetings. And so some of Kill Radio actually grew out of that pirate radio community that was built up around KBLT in the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, and tell us about KBLT just for a little historical reference.
KBLT was started by a woman named, she used the name Paige Jarrett, but her real name is Sue Carpenter. She works at the LA Times now. But as a struggling writer, she had also started a station, KPBJ, to continue the food reference, up in San Francisco in the early 90s. When she moved down here, she wanted to start another one up. So I think in around 1995 or so, she started broadcasting KBLT from somewhere in the mid-LA area, I think on, near Santa Monica and Highland or something like that. Eventually, she moved to Silver Lake, and the transmitter was located on top of her apartment building on a hill in Silver Lake. It was about 20-something watts. You could probably hear it out to maybe West Hollywood. And then as things developed and people put more money in and more time, the transmitter was moved up to a skyscraper in Hollywood, pumped up to 40 watts, and you could hear it out to Santa Monica. You could hear it out to the beach. And that was going on for about 3 months before the FCC finally came and shut it off. We turned it back on again. They shut it off again. And at that point, they were waiting for her and said, you can give us your equipment or you can keep the equipment and pay a $10,000 fine and possibly face a year in jail. So at that point, she shut it down. There were probably at the height, it was going 24/7, and I think there were 60 or 70 different DJs with shows.
Wow. Are there a number, more than just a couple of DJs from that crew, that have shown up and done Kill Radio stuff?
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's at least probably 8 or 10, at least there were at the beginning. There's a few left now. I know Bennett, that has a show on Saturday nights. And I are at least two of the holdouts. I'm not sure how many others right now.
What's your show about?
My show is usually I just play strange music, read the news, some activist stuff, some things out of UFO and strange phenomena magazines, and I have interviews about once every four or five shows. I'll do an interview with those kind of people.
Great.
And I interviewed Robert Sterling a few weeks ago, who wrote 50 Reasons Not to Vote for Bush, which just came out from Farrell House. That was a fun interview.
Now, is that interview available anywhere on the internet?
No, but I have it recorded. And now that you've put me on notice, I think I'm going to put it up on the server there. We do have archive shows on the Kill Radio site.
Great. Okay, we're going to keep moving here and working our way around the room here. James Maverick. James, thanks for coming along today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stephen.
Couple of questions. I think, people have this sort of sense of a radio collective, and let's drill down a little bit. Let's get a deeper understanding of what that means. How many people are in the collective? How does somebody get involved? What are the requirements? What's it like being a member of a radio collective?
Well, we have dozens of people in the collective. We have about 50 show hosts, plus a lot of other people who appreciate Kill Radio for our mission and what we do. Insofar as getting a show on the radio, on Kill Radio, then all you need to do basically is to attend some of our meetings, attend consensus training, and tech training. That's basically all you need to do. We have a few slots.
Well, wait. Let me back you up. Can you say consensus training? What does that mean?
Consensus training is training that we have pretty much to learn how to work in consensus. Consensus, I think, goes beyond democracy, where you share an idea with the collective and we get input on how to make that idea better. We try to get input from everyone in the collective or anyone who has input on that particular issue. We want to make sure that everyone is heard, everyone's issue is addressed before moving on with that particular idea, because the idea, once it's shared, belongs to the collective.
So it's a media collective that tries to create an environment where all ideas can be shared and the best of those ideas can be consensed upon. Is that what you're saying?
Precisely, yes.
Right. And why is that different from other media operations?
I think the reason why is because it's not hierarchical. There's no person in charge that says, okay, Bill is the person who says yay or nay, thumbs up, thumbs down to anything, which means that there are some people who may have some fantastic ideas that get disenfranchised and there are egos that eventually will get in the way. And that, I think, is more harmful from a personal growth standpoint than actually sharing ideas, getting input, making that germinate into a flower, if you will, that we can all appreciate, that we all can nurture.
Do you think the spirit of that kind of collaboration comes forward on the airwaves and in the sort of group environment that you all work in? Do you think that works?
Absolutely.
And why?
I think why is because you feel that you're a part of something. Again, there's no hierarchy, so that you're not subject to someone else's dream. What you're doing is you're putting in your energy to the dreams of dozens of other people, people of color, people of different classes, different ideologies. Thank you. And to me, I think that's much more pure society than, I'd say, a democracy.
Fascinating stuff. We are going to keep moving around the room. We've actually been joined by a couple of more people, and we have with us David Bonobo. David, you're a member of the collective, this shared vision collective that that James was just describing. Mm-hmm. What's it like being part of it? You know, what kind of relationships do you form in such an environment?
We have meetings a couple times a month, and you see people come and some people go. They're busy with their lives and they can't make it to all the meetings, but you know, we have parties, everybody comes out, and you know, the thing about it that I really like the most, it kind of going back to what James was saying, is whatever ideas that we have, whatever we want to bring to it, it's totally open, and we have a lot of freedom to do whatever we want to create things for the station. A lot of things that I've been able to do with my own show that in turn benefit the station as a whole, things like benefit shows that I've organized. There's going to be a couple different Kill Radio CDs that different DJs are putting together with different bands and things on it. Things like that, that, you know, I think someplace else you may get shot down. Somebody may not like your idea. Somebody may think it doesn't work. But if you like it, if you believe in it, you can pretty much take it and run with it and do what you want, which is a really great thing.
And what kind of show do you do?
My show is called Sopreso, and it's a little conceptual. It's all music. Basically, it's all music that's got a tie to Africa. So I keep a funky edge on it, but it's everything from Afrobeat to samba to jazz to cumbia to whatever.
Very cool. So we're at 90.7 KPFK FM in Los Angeles. We're joined today on Indie Media on the Air by a number of members. We've been joined by more as we sit here of the Kill Radio Collective, killradio.org, just the way it sounds, killradio.org, is, as I keep saying, and certainly in my strong sense as a really remarkable radio station, a fine, fine radio station that you can listen to on the net every now and then if you're driving along, and you might even catch it on the radio. But we're sitting here discussing what it means to be a radio collective and what it means to come together, as James Maverick was just describing, for a shared vision, and how one moves through a process of forming that vision and sharing that vision with people.